listening to the Hometown Losers, the St. Louis Sports Podcast, with Josh, Adam, and OJ.
Hey, everybody, welcome back here to the Hometown Losers Podcast. This is session number 39 and officially the Hometown Losers 1 year anniversary. Gentlemen, wow. Happy anniversary to you two. I'm joined as always with Adam and OJ. Well, as I said before, happy anniversary to you guys. That sounds weird, but it's kind of
happy anniversary. I spent 1 year.
Yeah, that's pretty. I mean, hey, that is pretty cool, though, that we actually made it a year or so. You know, what's the last thing you can think of that you've actually done for a whole year that, you know, actually is somewhat productive? So how about that? We did something.
My job.
Well, I mean, house, talking like to your boss. Yeah, we have a review coming up. Ironically, it lines up with this. Anyway.
Yeah, exactly. Hey, did you two get the flowers I sent you for the anniversary? I'm just kidding.
I was going to say, I was hoping, like I said last week on the podcast, a steak dinner. But like I said, you can pay for it. You don't have to be there. So.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm good with that. Anyway.
Cool. Oh, man. Cool. Well, guys, let's go ahead and jump. Yeah, 39 episodes, which I guess is not really that bad of a ratio for a year, right? Because there's 52 weeks in a year. So
yeah, well,
obviously we're going to miss a few here and there. But yeah, only missing 13 weeks in a year is pretty good, you know?
That's pretty good. Hey.
Yeah.
Sometimes we have nothing going on,
for holidays and stuff. Yeah, exactly. Right. OJ, to your point, it's not like we're getting paid to do anything yet.
Wait, your guys aren't getting paid?
Gotta put them together. Oh my! Like
this is awkward. Oh my!
Exactly. You signed a 2-year deal. We didn't even know about it.
Yeah, exactly.
Anyway.
Yeah. Oh, all right. Well, let's go ahead and jump into it here, guys, and talk about some depressing stuff here. And that is the STLSC. City lost game one and game two. Obviously, we talked about it last week with the loss to game one. We all three of us were at the watch party at City and then actually went to Maggie O'Brien's. I will give them a shout out because that was a much better atmosphere than the watch party, if I'm being quite honest. But it was not the great game. You know, obviously, it's a very disappointing to lose that quickly in the playoffs. But as we all kind of know, like, we just didn't get the results at, towards the end of the season. Came into the playoffs on a 2-game losing streak, and they came in. Kansas City has won 6 out of their last 7 games, which is pretty impressive, you know, under stretch.
It's just that, you know, being a top seed in the playoffs, you know, our expectations were definitely high, and we all had our sights, you know, set onto a, you know, more likely a deep playoff run. So falling to a rival like Kansas City in round one, well, yeah, it really sucked. So
yeah, and to your rival too. Your state rival.
Yeah, it's one of our big, you know, this is one of our rivals, so to speak. You know, I understand that, you know, you've got your ups and downs and stuff, but and those, you know, those losses hit us hard, but obviously a rival match in particular, you know, has that extra edge, you know, especially in that first round. Like not even getting a game, that really sucked. So
OJ, but I think you're gonna bring up a point. Sorry, Adam.
No, it's all good. I was just gonna say, what made me mad about it is I feel they kind of let it happen to themselves. I think they kind of took their foot off the gas and coasted to the end of the season and then just didn't have, you know, they kind of got surprised, I guess, by the intensity of the playoffs at that point. So I kind of think that's what happened. I mean, obviously they had some poor luck. I mean, certainly at least I haven't seen the expected goals for the second game, but the first game, you know, it was wildly out of whack. So, you know, they had some
horrible officiating,
bad luck. Yeah, terrible officiating. Yeah, it doesn't help matters. But
But we still weren't performing. Game two
was exactly, Adam. And like game two was much better on the officiating. There was a few things that went their way, but there was also a few things that went our way. But we just didn't play well. And we set ourselves up for failure going into the postseason, you know, throttling back and coasting, as you said, OJ. But then obviously I think that we really got the wind taken out of ourselves by bad officiating, putting ourselves and put our backs against the wall to a team that is on a run right now with KC, and now they believe you just lost your home field advantage. You know, and there's just a lot that goes into it, but you know, we needed to be better, and the entire first half of that of game two was dominated by KC. It was very lucky that it was only 1-0 going into halftime. But it definitely felt like it could have been 2 or 3-0, just the way that they were building up. But we just had like there was just no spark. You know, there was no creativity. There just seemed to be absolutely no spark, and we were just very passive. Excuse me.
Soft, it seemed like they didn't get it until late in the game.
Yeah,
it seems like they didn't get that spark till late. Like they got their backs against the wall, then they found the urgency they should have had from the beginning. Mm-hmm. And all of a sudden, it looks like a much better team, too. Unsurprising.
Yeah, it looked like the City team that we've seen all year, but it took a 2-0 deficit to all of a sudden to start sparking that. You know,
that's
what I mean?
Just the danger of taking it easy, coasting into the playoffs. Mm-hmm. I think that needs to be a lesson to Carnell that you need to find a way to keep the intensity up and get guys healthy. Like you have to do both, really, if you want to have a good chance to win the playoffs.
Yeah, for me.
If you've got one of those big breaks, you know what I mean? Otherwise, you know, just do what you got to do to get there.
Yeah, I was going to say, for me, those losses are, you know, looking at the grand scheme of things, obviously it's just a temporary setback on our, you know, eventual road to success. But that loss, as tough as it was, I think should definitely be a learning experience, to your point, OJ. And eventually that should be a stepping stone for us, you know, towards making those greater achievements and, you know, the upcoming season as well. So we have to learn, you know, do lessons learned and you know, apply ourselves much harder next season for sure. So.
Yeah. And speaking of looking next year, you know, what can we build off of? You know, like, what are we looking forward to next year? I do believe that it won't be the same season. You know, obviously, coming into the season, everybody had us picked to finish dead last in the MLS, and obviously, we proved them all wrong. Looking at it, I'm not 100%. Like, I have confidence that this team can do it again, but I think it's going to be very difficult for this team to finish as the one seed again. And the reason why is just because we're going to have a target on our back the entire season, right? Mm-hmm. Everybody knows what City's about now. They know how to play them. They, you know, they know that they're not just, you know, little brother and taking it easy on them kind of thing, right? So, you know, it's going to be, to me, it's just a difficult thing to repeat, but we are capable of doing it. You know, that's just in my opinion, but what are you two guys looking forward, you know, to next year, and what do you guys want to build off? Adam, I want to start with you.
Yeah. So, I mean, for me, you know, obviously their debut season, it was definitely a roller coaster of emotions, and it's, for me, it's safe to say that exceeded all my expectation for sure. You know, watching them play, you know, that high pressing, you know, transition style, it was, you know, definitely super thrilling. You know, they managed to basically take, you know, unknown players that and turn them into household names in this league. And I think for me, that's a testament to not only their scouting, but their coaching efforts and everything else. So I have to give them kudos. While we're talking about depressing things, for sure, I think they did a phenomenal job in this inaugural season. But even though we enjoyed the success of their debut, I think it's essential to really recognize that they have some challenges ahead, especially, you know, overperforming their expected goal difference. While it is fantastic, it's not always sustainable as well. You know, you can just ask, you know, Austin, you know, how that's going. You know, it's something that we have to definitely keep an eye on. You know, the good news is there's some exciting opportunities on our horizon, you know, with some financial flexibility. You know, they might be able to make some strategic moves in the transfer market, potentially, like maybe adding like a high level attacker, maybe take some weight off of Klaus, or in shoring up the defense as well. You know, especially in that center back, could be big game changers as well. But overall, you know, let's not forget, of course, our incredible fan base, you know, and obviously top notch infrastructure that we've got here. I think that's definitely a game changer for us. So I think the future for City SC really looks promising, and with the right moves in the offseason, I think we have a force to be reckoned with in the next season.
I agree.
Yeah, for sure. And I do believe, I'm not necessarily believing that we actually need like a forward. I mean, it'd be great to get a legitimate striker, as you said, Adam, to take some pressure off us. But I do believe we have some young guys that can do that. Jackson was pretty good as well for stretches. I think we need D, right? In the center back, maybe even a midfielder, like more of a defensive end. I think we need to shore that up because we got attacked very hard by Sporting Kansas City through the middle, and it led us to just a really bad time because we were just immediately backtracking every time. And then also our mid play, like our play through the midfield, there was no creativity. We continued to try to force the ball outside. And then once we were there, nobody's running. Nobody's trying to make runs. There was no creativity through the middle of the field at all. So for me, like if we're going to try to go grab some players, I would definitely look at, you know, a defensive back, maybe a veteran, you know, that knows what he's doing. And then maybe look for a midfielder. You know, somebody that can be kind of that can take pressure off Lubin, because Lubin's having to do everything there, right? So I think that you know, could definitely help. OJ, what's your thoughts?
Do think that Blome was kind of inconsistent. I mean, most of the season he was pretty good, at least at being a defensive midfielder.
Especially the beginning of the season, he was lights out. He was phenomenal.
Yeah, there's just like some times where he wasn't just had bad games. So, you know, you could maybe use some reinforcements in the midfield but you got Aziel Jackson, who has kind of stepped up as like an alternative. He actually took over the number 10 in some cases for them and let Lubin play more like a 9, I think. Yeah, so I don't know. I think they got some midfielders. Like, they have a good roster. They really probably should have won. But, yeah, they also have an opportunity to add more here. So that'll be kind of interesting to see what they do. And then next season they're going to have to really get at it.
Agreed. And, you know, I think that, Adam, you brought the point about financial flexibility. I think the fact that we've had so much success this season, not just, you know, on the standings, but also we sold out every single home game. In that, you know, ticket prices were not cheap for the most part.
No, they weren't. Games, not at all. They were definitely not. So, but we showed up.
Right.
They were paying it.
So exactly. And we showed up, and like everybody. And again, even that watch party that was not, I really don't want to get into like per se. But yeah, the watch party though was sold out.
It was sold out. Yeah. Within like 20 minutes. So
yeah. Like, I do believe that, you know, our fan base is going to give us that ability to be able to, you know, maybe, you know, because the thing is, you also don't need, like, the team doesn't need to make money to really be able to renovate anything. They, you know, all that stuff's also just going to, you know, go into it. It's a one-year-old stadium, one-year-old field. So, like, basic maintenance is just going to be kind of like all you have to do, right? So all of the money that they can be put straight back into the team. And I'm hoping they do that so that way they continue to have the product, because then they know that they're going to have the exact same experience. It's not just the inaugural season.
Right.
People are going to flock to those games consistently. You know what I mean?
And it'll just create a better and better product. And obviously, you know, that's reinvesting in itself is obviously the smartest thing to do in business, especially when you're trying to get this thing off, you know, off the ground, so to speak. And so building a fan base, they want to keep them loyal. So they need to obviously reinvest in that product. And obviously that being the team. So a good product will have loyal fans and it will pay its dividends.
Yeah. And I think they've got a pretty smart front office. I think they are a pretty smart organization in general. So I look forward to seeing how they do next year.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, I agree. And I think that, you know, it obviously is disappointing for all City fans right now. I know all three of us were pretty deflated and, you know, disappointed, obviously, leaving Maggie O's, you know, after that game. But the thing is, there's always a silver lining, especially when you look at this now. This is our inaugural year. This is year one, you know, and we could do almost what the Vegas Knights have done. You know, like, yeah, they in their first year, they get to the Stanley Cup final. They lose to Washington. Right. But then what? 3-4 years later, they win it. You know what I mean? That could be us. We
have a solid team. Yeah, we have a solid team. There's no doubt about it. It's just. Obviously, you know, there's some few tweaks that we need to, you know, we have to make. And we identified, you know, some of those gaps that we'll have to cover. But I think that all the rest of the cards are, you know, in our hand are looking good. So I think we should continue to see success.
I agree.
Well, I mean, let's face it, we have a great goalkeeper, so.
I was just about to bring up Berkey. So for anybody that has not seen this, Berkey officially has won the best keeper of the MLS season for the 2023 season. Deservedly which I think so. 100% deservedly so. And so I really thought this was going to be much closer when it came to the voting, because Cincinnati's keeper had a really good season. In fact, he won the best save of the year, and he was actually out of the top five finalists. He had two or three of them, if I remember correctly, of like, you know, the best saves. He had a phenomenal year as well. And obviously the number one seed in the East, you know, it deservedly so for him. But Berkey got over 60% of the vote out of the three finalists, which was kind of surprising to me, but deservedly so, as you said, OJ, that it had to be Berkey. You know, if he's not going to win MVP, which he's not, unfortunately, on the finalists for MVPs anymore, he definitely needs to at least win that. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I mean, for sure. MVPs rarely win in this league, or goalies very rarely win MVPs. Yeah, keepers. Is what I was trying to say. Sorry.
Yeah. Yeah. No, you're good. Yeah. Yeah. And actually, what it kind of reminds me of a little bit, this situation is like Berkey is like for the past couple of years in football, these Justin Jefferson and Cooper Kupp, it's specifically 2 years ago, not this past season, but the year before that, where Cooper Kupp almost broke the record for the most receiving yards in a single year, but he didn't win MVP, even though he was in the MVP conversation. And then towards the end of the year, he dropped out of the top five, but he did win the offensive player of the year. So it's like, how does he win the offensive player of the year, but not MVP? Well, I mean, they're going to give the MVP to those, as you said, OJ, it's not going to be a keeper. It's going to be a striker, somebody more flashy, somebody that's, you know, they have the stats to kind of pad it. Where, you know, Berkey is going to be able to, you know, be the offensive player of the year. So to speak, in that sense, obviously, you know, these apples and oranges are both, you know, a sport, but completely different the way they're structured. But that's just kind of how it, you know, it feels like when it comes to keepers, because I think the keeper in MLS has only won the MVP one time. And I could be wrong on that, but I thought that's what I read when Berkey was named as a finalist for the or the original finalist list or whatever the hell it was for the MVP, or maybe it was just like our nominee for the MVP award. I don't remember, to be quite honest, but.
Oh yeah. Yeah, he would probably be. Yeah.
Yeah. Cause it's either him or Lubin. And I think that Berkey is more, you know, more the MVP for this team than Lubin. And that's not to take anything away from Lubin. Lubin had a phenomenal season and he did really well. Unfortunately, he did not win the newcomer award, which that also kind of irritated me, because he finished third behind Messi and behind the eventual winner, which I can't even pronounce his name, but he is the striker for Atlanta United. Georgios is his first name. So
gotcha. Yeah, Messi shouldn't even be in any conversations for any awards because he didn't
he hasn't played.
Yep.
Unless there's an award you can win for like playing only six games, then sure. Yeah, like if you were handing out an award for who played the best six games in the league or something, then yeah, maybe you give it to him. Probably
yeah,
not.
And like
I don't know that he even would get that.
Yeah, I mean,
you probably.
Well, I'm glad it's a good thing for MLS.
Six game stretch.
Yeah, but it's just like, okay, we can't really, you know, give him. He's already had plenty of accolades already just by, you know, joining the MLS for sure, in my opinion. Yeah. So I think
well,
it's
the thing
a far stretch.
I really do believe what went into this. A lot of what I think went into Messi finishing second. And by the way, Messi actually won the players' vote. So for anybody that does not know how it works, is you have players, media, and clubs. And the clubs are like the coaches in the front office. They all have votes on who gets into this, right? Messi actually won the players' vote, 35% to 34% to Georgios. Excuse me. And Georgios is the Atlanta Strikers' first name. He actually, in media, he lost in this Messi. He got only 12%. Lubin actually got 20% in the media, which is kind of funny. You would feel like it's the exact opposite. You know what I mean?
Right.
But
yeah, I mean, the players I get, because if you're a player, when you think of how valuable is a player, they think of dollar amounts, right? And if you're putting a dollar amount on whose services are the most valuable in MLS, then it's definitely fucking messy. So like, when you're that close to it, I think that's where a lot of players are coming from. Like, because none of them think they're better than him. You know what I mean?
100%. And so, OJ, that's like, you know, when you're in like Little League baseball or whatever, and you're voting for the All-Star. And even though, you know, this guy that is like the best player on your team, but he had a really crappy year, you still vote for him because you know he's better. However, well, of course, his statistics are not as good as you. Right. And so, but I do believe that a lot of this, even the fact that he finished as a finalist, went to the fact that he won the Ballon d'Or, the overall FIFA MVP award. I really believe that it was on his old accolades and not the MLS accolades. And I understand, truthfully, that it's very hard to ignore that, when especially when you're talking about Messi, because when you talk about Messi, you talk about the international success. Obviously, just won a Gold Cup with Argentina. World Cup with Argentina. I get all that, but you have to look at it objectively from an MLS standpoint, because, like, again, if I was Leuven, right? And so say Messi won and Leuven finished second. If I was Leuven, I would be incredibly pissed. I would feel, and not to City, but to MLS period, I would feel very disrespected. Be like, okay, so this guy's going to come in for six games and completely overshadow everything that I did for the entire season. Maybe I don't want to be in this league. You know, that's kind of like, I don't think that Leuven would do something like that, even in this.
No, but it's not fair to them, though. You know, he didn't earn it.
You know, yeah.
So, agreed. I mean, and let's face it, it's not like Messi hasn't already had, you know, his ego stroked enough in this league already. So it's not like he's not getting enough recognition.
Other things.
You know what I mean? Like, that's what I'm saying. So it's not like they have to literally give him, you know, the keys and the kingdom of everything. You know, they're giving him that would be uncalled for. So let some of these other guys, you know, get a little recognition as well, where it's definitely deserved.
I agree.
Because they earned it.
Yeah, and that's the thing the thing that it does irritate me, is that Leuven is not going to win any awards now. And I do believe that a Leuven, and he kind of, just like the rest of the team, he kind of started declining, so to speak, towards the end of the season, and just didn't play necessarily to like an MVP level or to what we saw at the beginning of the season. But I definitely believe he deserved at least one award, you know, maybe best midfielder, whatever you want to put down for that. I think he deserves an award. I mean, the dude played phenomenal for such a long period of time. It was so important to the success for City, but, you know, it is what it is. And, you know, hopefully he can come out and prove everybody next year that he is an MVP and that, you know, he can come out and get some stuff done. Right.
That's the plan.
Yeah. Well, guys, let's move on from STLSC and let's get to something still disappointing, depressing, although it's not as depressing right now. And let's talk about a little bit about Blues. Go on, Adam. Sorry.
I was going to say it's ish, you know, like, because mentioning the Blues, you know, we've the past like four games, I think we've split them or whatever. So, and we've seen a few improvements here and there.
Yeah. So the Blues are 5-5-1 right now for 11 points. We're 6 in the Central. We're actually only 5 points back right now. Obviously, it's still, you know, in the infancy of the season. We're 2 points out of the last wild card spot. We're actually 10th in the West. And we're 22nd in the NHL, 12 points behind Vegas, which, because Vegas is still winning. I do need to point out, though, that 6th in the Central is actually up one position from last week, which we were at 7th. The 10th in the West is one position up from where we were last week as well. We were at 11th, and we're at 10th now. And the 22nd is 5 positions up. We were at 27th last week in the NHL, obviously 22nd in the NHL now. But it still feels like this team is either dominating games or they're getting blown out in games. Like, this to me feels like a complete 500 team.
Yo, they go through stretches where they look super dominant. Like, tonight, they're kind of dominating Arizona. Like, they were at, like, 14 shots to 3 at towards the end of the first, last I saw. And it was, like, you know, it's 1-1. Somehow Arizona got a goal on one of their 3 shots, but we were smoking them. Now it's at 19-7, 20-7. So Yeah, they came out mad, I think.
One thing that I've noticed as well, like in the past two games, has definitely been Robert Thomas. You know, he scored, I think it's over the last like four games, he scored four goals and one assist, you know, and that's obviously, you know, a huge milestone for, you know, for us. And overall, like you were mentioning, the shot count, we're averaging about 30 shots on goal in the last four games, which is a positive sign. But unfortunately, we're just not converting those opportunities into goals, you know, especially our loss against Colorado and Winnipeg as well. You know, that those really stung.
Yeah, and
one thing I will say about that, though, is I much rather have the 30 shots, you know, per game. Compared to like the first three games that we had, we were averaging like 22. You know, that's not going to win games, you know. And sometimes, you know, like sometimes they're weak shots, but at least you're putting pressure on the, on, you know, the goalie, keeping them honest and putting pressure on the defense. You know what I mean? Like that's the kind of stuff that, you know, you're that's winning, going to win you championships. I mean, that's what we did in 19. We would throw pucks at net and we had people in front and we won a lot of games off of dirty goals, man, in 2019. Yeah. And I feel like we got to get back to that type of play, even though the players not necessarily fit that strength anymore. But we are not a team that can predicate our offensive abilities off of speed, because we just don't have that much all the way through. I mean, we have like Kyrie, we can fly, but not that much else speed. So we can't play like a zone trap, so to speak, in the defensive zone and then push it real quick forward to try to create, you know, odd man rushes or breakaways and stuff like that on a consistent basis. So I think that we needed to continue to try to funnel the shots to the net. That's all I got to say, you know, about at least the shots. You know, I'm more comfortable, obviously, getting 30 shots. Even if you're losing games, it just means at least you're trying to put pressure down. You know what I mean?
Right. Well, one player that definitely needs to step it up, in my opinion, is Booch, because he's only had 3 points and one goal in 9 games. You know, and we're really relying on him to pick up his performance. So that's a really big disappointment, especially considering, you know, his previous seasons as well. But he's just really off to a slow start this season.
Well, that's part of the problem is that right now we have not as many guys that can actually score the puck either. So Buchnevich is getting a lot of the focus of other teams right now, and we don't have enough guys to take the pressure off. So that's kind of the bad part about how we're playing right now. But I think the most important thing for me is not even necessarily shots, because certainly part of the shots is that they've made a conscious effort to become less selective and put more pucks on net. So, and I think it's something they needed to do. So that's good. But like I said, not all these shots are going to be the highest quality. What's really more important is the fact that they're dominating teams to such an extent. Because it's not even just Arizona tonight, but they've had a period against Colorado where they look dominant against Colorado. Mm-hmm. Like they've had flashes and stretches of time where they look like I think it was their stretch during the New Jersey game where they looked like the 2019 Blues. Like they just kept coming in waves and New Jersey couldn't get out of their zone. And it was like, I mean, it was great to watch. But then, you know, then they get boat raced some other games. It's like,
yeah, for sure. You know, for me, especially, one positive thing that I have been noticing, and I think that we've all probably been noticing a little bit, is since we all kind of gave up on Parayko, he seems to be making somewhat of a comeback. You know, we're starting to see him some improvements, you know, in his skating and his defensive abilities overall. But that's somewhere where we lacked critically before. And that was, but obviously our offense is starting to lack now.
Yeah, I think we got some guys that are still kind of learning to forecheck. I mean, I think they're making progress. I think that's why they keep having these stretches where they look dominant. I think they have some forwards that are going out there forechecking well.
Right.
And I think some guys are learning to play that style a little bit still because they never had to before. But
I do have to say that some of that too comes from the inexperience in the other team. So, like, when you're coming through, like, you know, college, AHL, and stuff like that, you're not having these coaches that are like Chief, right? That are teaching you that you need the forecheck, you need to be able to finish your hits, you need to be able to play the man's game, so to speak, right? Please don't cancel me because I said man's game. But what I mean by that is, so like, I've seen a lot of like, actually, you know what? A prime example of that, because I know a lot about his history, is TJ Oshie. TJ Oshie was an offensive, like a very good offensive player for North Dakota. And his coach and his coaching staff try to develop his shot more than like wanting him to go out and put the hammer down on people and to play the checking game and stuff like that. But Oshie was like, that's not how I play. I generate a lot of like my own emotional like success and stuff like that off of like going out and checking people. And so he kind of went out and did that. When I read about that, when I heard about that, it kind of opened up my eyes that, you know, you at the level of like high school and college, you kind of you're human, right? You're going to go out there and tell your best player to just go out and score as many goals as you can, right? It's like the Stanley's game, right? You get Ike out there on the ice, give it the puck to the Canadian, he's going to score, right? Or like right. Bart Simpson in the Simpsons, you know, you give it to him because he's the best player on the ice at all times.
Yeah, or it's like Letterkenny after the hockey players get good.
yeah, exactly right. Yeah, and so
they start taking leg day seriously.
But it's not just hockey, right? Because when we had Danny on here, you know, he was talking about that in, you know, when he played soccer, is like his high school and like his college coach and everything. They knew that he was the best striker. So they just said, get the ball and you go, you know, beat 1-1 and just put the ball on net. Right. Well, and then once he started playing international, they're like, you're going to learn how to play the game the right way. And it opened up his eyes. And I feel like a lot of our young guys, and OJ, you brought up a great point on this, that people are still learning the forecheck and all that stuff. They're not being taught that at a younger age. You're literally having to learn at the highest level. And I think that really says a lot, because, and not every coach wants that either. Vooch is very much, or not Vooch, excuse me, Chief Berube is very much like, you know, a working man. He's kind of Ken Hitchcock too, in a sense, you know what I mean? And that he wants people to be able to grind away and to do that, but sometimes it's going to develop. And to the point I was trying to bring up before I start rambling on here, but the New Jersey Devils is a very young team, and they are predicated and built on speed and skill. They're not really a forechecking team and stuff like that. Obviously, they're going to do it at some points and stuff. So, OJ, you brought up a good point that they dominated stretches of the New Jersey Devil game. Maybe that's because of that, though, with some of the inexperience when it comes to that.
Yeah.
But when you get into – but it also doesn't make sense that you were able to really keep up with Colorado for a while. And that's a very, very – I mean, yes, they have some youth, right? But they're a very experienced team, obviously.
Right.
Yeah, and I mean, New Jersey's not the most physical team, but even against them, it's still really hard to cycle the puck in their zone long, you know? Exactly. Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Like, it's something that we're doing right. So, I mean, that's, you know, they're showing flashes. So maybe they got something going here, because, you know, the last couple of years, I don't think their players really took forechecking very seriously. And now they're like, we're going to do it this year. It's going to happen or else. Yeah. Like, Shen's in charge now. So you aren't going to get by without doing your part.
No, because Shen will drop the gloves in practice. And we obviously saw that he didn't drop the gloves, but know that he got into a verbal / physical altercation and preseason with somebody. I can't remember exactly who, but Shen is a guy, and he's very much like Steen in that sense. It's no nonsense, right? And Petrangelo is also kind of that way. We need to be able to have that too, where you're not listen, I loved Roar. I really did, but I don't think Roar was really teaching that way. Right. I don't think he was really leading as a captain that way. So you have Berube saying one thing, but when your captain of the team is not necessarily reiterating that and then doing that in practice, you kind of feel this disconnect between the coach, like the coach's message and who you are as a team. You know what I mean?
I mean, O'Reilly's definitely not the kind of guy to put the fear in God in people like Shen is. I agree with that.
It's not to say that Roar was a bad captain, but.
No, not at all. But yeah, if you got some, I don't know, somebody that thinks they know it all and doesn't want to listen, like, is Ryan O'Reilly really going to drag them and make them listen? Or is he going to be like, okay, well, fuck you. And and then you kind of have a little rift.
Be the latter.
Exactly. That's my point. Yeah. Like, Shen will beat the shit out of you. So
yeah. And I think some of that is that Shen also has a chip on his shoulder that, you know, he feels that he has a lot to prove. He's a good hockey player. but he feels like he's got a lot to prove on it with the Blues because he's been overshadowed for so long. You know, it's always been somebody else. It's always been Roar, Pietrangelo, Esteem, like whomever when it comes to a leadership role or just as a talent level, right? But as you said, you know, OJ, he's not gonna back down from that. I feel that if that happened, a young kid not listening to Roar would just look at him and go, okay, cool, you're just not gonna listen to a Conn Smythe winner. Okay, you good luck with that and just walk away.
Yeah, exactly.
And completely ice them out at that point in time. And that is not how you develop youth, even though it can be frustrating. You're like a parent, you know, like they're gonna do some stuff or whatever, and you're gonna have to kind of set them straight, but just say, hey, listen, man, that wasn't a good play, but also, you know, reward them when it is. But I feel that this team can be better, but if right now, obviously, what they're proving is that they are a straight 500 team. It does give me hope, not just for the rest of this year, but maybe next season, but who knows? You know?
Yeah. I mean, honestly, I think it's kind of a rare trait to be somebody that actually holds your coworkers accountable, like,
agreed,
in a major way like that, like calling people out in the locker room stuff. That is a different culture from like a regular office or something like that. But a lot of people don't really feel like doing that. You know what I mean? And that's my point. I think Ryan O'Reilly is too much of a – he's like a pro, and like he's kind-hearted and stuff. I don't think you'd be like, I'm going to impose my will on my teammate, like essentially like Shen probably would.
And, you know, there's definitely a balancing act when it comes to that, OJ. Like, I'll give an example. You know, and Adam, actually, I don't know you were there, but like at, you know, Adam and I's old work office, which obviously I won't say the company's name, but, you know, we're working for tech support and it's a call center. And I was pretty good friends with a lot of people as a trainer. And so people knew me kind of as more of like a lackadaisical joking type of guy, but I was also still a manager. I was also still a leader. And I was taking calls myself because calls were not getting answered. And I got fed up with it. So I literally went, like, walked away from my desk and went to the middle of the office and just screamed at it and said, you know, if you're not,
I remember that.
If you don't get in queue in the next 30 seconds, I'm writing you up. I'm done with this. As a manager, I'm here to help you guys, but you aren't doing your jobs. I see too many people like being lackadaisical.
Goofing off,
And it, you know, it's, put the fear of God in them. Not that I'm obviously threatening anybody physically, which would be different in hockey, obviously. But you know, it's that thing that there has to be a balance between the two. And to your point, OJ, I feel that Ryan O'Reilly's too much of a player's captain. You know what I mean? To put it in perspective, because I hung around the team a little bit when I worked for the Blues, I think Petro was also that way, but he really relied on Steen. He really relied on other people to be able to kind of put that fear in God.
Well,
into him. Not to say that he was a bad captain, because he definitely got the message through and definitely did the work in practice, but he kind of relied on an enforcer, so to speak.
And it also depends disciplined your players are, self-disciplined as well. You know what I mean?
Of course.
Because,
and when
I mean,
Pietrangelo was here, you know who else was here? Fucking Steen, dude. Like, Steen was here, Steen, too. Oh, okay. Sorry.
Yeah.
I might have missed
something. No, you're fine. No, you're perfectly fine, because Steen was that dude. And because I'm telling you right now, when I hung around the guy, Steen was not the most pleasant person to be around.
That's what I'm saying.
I love Steen, but he was kind of a dick. He just really was. But it just, you know, to your point, and Adam, that you brought up a good point too, that you have to have a self-discipline. It is definitely harder for young kids to come into the league.
Absolutely.
And like I look at Clem Kostin. And you know, obviously, who didn't even make the roster.
Mm-hmm.
Is Kostin even on our team anymore? Like, is he still playing for us in the AHL level?
Clem
I didn't
Kostin?
Think so.
No, where did he go?
I keep saying Kostin. Yeah.
He's with. Where is he?
I can't remember it. Yeah.
He's with the Red Wings, I think. Is he with the Red Wings?
Okay.
Maybe.
Let me bring up my point about Clem, though. Was I this was during the COVID year. Adam and you and I were at the game. This is, you know, we were lucky enough to get tickets because obviously they only had like a couple
hundred
entire
stadium. I remember that game.
And Clem continued to put his head down and try to deke through everybody and was continuing to get muscled off the puck. And I'm like screaming on the top of my lungs, and I'm like, get your fucking head up. Right. What are you doing? And even the guy behind me was just like, dude, this isn't the AHL and this is not roller hockey. I'm like, thank you. Like, he continues to try to just go in there and do whatever the hell he wants to do rather than playing the game of the hockey the right way. But, you know, you need to be able to have the right people in him to be able to smack around and be like, dude, you're hurting our team. You're not helping. You think you're helping your team.
You got to be a team player.
You're not. You're hurting. Yeah. Like,
yeah. That's the problem, though. And that's part of that is the maturity. And obviously, or it's either maturity or you have to have the right leader that gets them to see that from that perspective. Like what you're saying, Josh, is that you're hurting the team. I know what you're thinking you're doing is by, you know, going in there and doing this, you're helping, but you're actually not. So it's very much a team sport, and you have to have your head up and you have to pass. And sometimes the opportunity will not be yours, but you have to be able to help your team because you win as a team. You know what I mean? You don't win as a player.
As a unit.
Yeah, exactly. And right. And yep.
Yeah. You know, I was just going to say in hockey, I firmly believe that hockey, you know, has taught me a lot about life. And I firmly believe that it's a team effort, man. And so when it comes into Gretzky, sorry, my dog's looking right at me. But Gretzky is the prime example of that. I remember watching interviews about the 50 goals in 49 games, which is a feat that I truly, in my heart of hearts, do not think that'll ever get matched. Maybe somebody will be able to break his 82 goals in one single season. Maybe somebody can do that, or maybe somebody can break 100, you know, including the playoffs, because that was that, you know, miraculous year where you got 100 goals in a single season, obviously including the playoffs. That I think can happen, but 50 goals in 49 games is something I don't think will ever happen again. And even Wayne has said that is the one that I'm most proud of. You know, not the most goals, not the most assists, not the most points, not all these other accolades. That is the thing that I'm most proud of. And the reason for it is I had to play with the right team. I had to play with the right guys. Obviously, I was able to make shots, but he's like, I cannot tell you how many times I got set up for success and people were so unselfish with the puck. It made me feel bad. But at the same time, I knew that those were the shots I had to take. Right. And so, like, when you have the greatest hockey player that's ever played, and that's in my opinion, I know it's arguable to a lot of people, but I believe that Wayne Gretzky is the best player that's ever played. When he's saying that and preaching the team game, I mean, the dude had more. He's got more assists than anybody else in hockey. You know what I mean? He's got more assists than the second person on the list has in points. That shows you what type of player he is. You know what I mean? On the way that he can create and stuff like that, but also believed in the team game, the team effort. Now, sorry for rambling there, but I just had to bring that point, especially about Wayne.
Absolutely.
Makes sense.
Yeah. It's pretty cool.
We'll obviously see what the Blues do. But, you know, right now it feels like, you know, maybe in a couple of weeks, our tunes change. Maybe instead of like splitting, they're winning 65-75% of the games, right? That's the only thing we can do right now as a team is just try to do better than last week. Go on.
Yeah, I mean, we definitely are going to face, looking at our, you know, tough week ahead for us, you know, it's not going to be pretty. I mean, obviously, we're winning right now against the Och, which we struggled with them in the past. We're facing the Avs again. We're also going to be facing the Lightning, and they've all done pretty well against us so far. But, you know, for us, finding consistency will have to be the key for us to find success.
Agreed.
Yeah. Man, they're just having trouble finishing anything.
Yeah.
It's like 2-1 still, but 27 shots to 10.
Wow.
Yeah. And I'm telling you, being on the ice for some of these games where we've gotten a lot of shots on, where we're either, you know, simple saves by the goalie or the goalie is making, I'm telling you right now, that can be very deflating, but all it takes is that one goal. And I'll tell you, I was playing a league out in Springfield, and we were down. We were down. They had 9. I know that. I think we had 4 going into the final period. And we're like, dude, we're putting pucks on pucks on pucks on this goalie. And he is making great saves. He actually played a lot of D1. He was a very good goalie. We went out there and just said, you know, hopefully, like, we're just going to keep at it. And hopefully, you know, we can get some through. Very early on in the period, we get a squeaker. It's a slap shot from the high post. And it literally goes off of a defensive player's stick and it goes into net. We're like, all right, cool. So we got a goal. Then our very next shot, a nice wrister, boom, right into the net. And all of a sudden, everything changed, and we won that game 10-9. Like, it just all of a sudden, an avalanche of goals because we broke through that. And I think that also, too, it's psychological for the goalie. You let in one, you let in two, and all of a sudden, you know, like, things are like, oh, crap, here they come. And obviously, we were putting pressure, and they definitely took their foot off the gas for sure because they thought they won that game. But sometimes that's what it takes. You know what I mean? It can come in clumps, right? So.
Yeah. Yeah. Got to play hard to the end.
For sure.
Exactly. All right, guys. Let's transition here and talk a little bit about MIZZOU and the football. Yep. So a little bit of an update here from Mizzou. Obviously, they lost to Georgia. Very, very close game. Mm-hmm. And I think even closer than what the score showed. We did drop in the CFP and the AP, but we only dropped two. So we are 14th in the CFP, which is the college football playoff rankings, which is pretty impressive that Mizzou is 14th. You know what I mean? Being Mizzou. And we are 16th in the AP right now. I do have to say that I really believe that the LSU loss screwed Mizzou, and not in the way that like us, we screwed ourselves, because I'm taking a look at the college playoff rankings right now. LSU is ranked 19th. They're ranked 19th. So they are literally five behind us, and they're at a 6-3 record. But okay, so then how do you sit there and say we lost to Georgia, who's number one, I believe, right? Or are they still number two? They're still number two. And then we lost to a very close game to LSU, who's 19th. And you're gonna and you're still have us at 14th, really? You know, like I don't know. Yeah, if we beat Tennessee, we better be in the top 10. That's all I gotta say.
Yeah, I mean, if we win out, we ought to finish the season in the top 10. Yeah, I think anyway. But
it's only four spots. I think you know what I mean?
They need to win out, though, because, look, they don't have the brand, so people aren't as willing to believe they're good. And if you didn't watch the Georgia-Mizzou game, you know, and you just see Georgia 1-9, that doesn't – you don't respect Mizzou off the score. You had to have watched the game and seen that Mizzou was able to run the ball against them, and they were able to stop the run and all that stuff. I actually heard a stat today. It was that apparently if I think the only times that Georgia scored touchdowns was when they were able to return the ball past their own like 35, something like that. So, like, that's the only times they scored touchdowns. Wow. Behind that, they only scored one field goal. Like, wow. So.
Yeah,
like,
that first half was pretty. Yeah. Something else, too.
They played them pretty fucking good. And Georgia's currently ranked number two in the country. So. Right.
Well, and people need to remember, too. And I actually, hold on. No, we were at one point in the lead in the fourth quarter, were we not?
No, I don't think so, but I think that's when we were down like three or four, and we were that's before Cook threw the interception, the first one.
Yeah.
So it is like, and the way things have been going, it's like, okay, we're going to march back up the field, score another touchdown, take the lead again, and then hope our defense can stop them. And then Cook threw the pick. I think the linebacker that was coming through on the blitz might have gotten a piece of his arm or something, but
And OJ, yeah, I know you and I talked about this, that honestly, like, you were in the prime position of where you wanted to be, right? You're down by one score to Georgia at home with 5.5 minutes left in the game. You just got to run your offense. And the way that you've been doing it, you're going to come down that field and hopefully score with like a minute and a half left and put all the pressure on Georgia. Now they got to come down. You know, you're at home. Pro Field is going to be very loud. You have a very good defense that's been able to get after the quarterback and force them to make an error, right? Or and really truly show everybody that Georgia is still a champion, right? Like, that's what you were at the position. And unfortunately, it was a mistake that Brady Cook threw, you know, that pick. And obviously, there was a second one. And everyone's like, oh, you made two big mistakes. I'm like, that second one wasn't really a mistake. He was trying to put air under the ball because you got to force it downfield. You're down by two scores. You know what I mean? So I think we're not giving enough credit on that one, but you know, it is either here or there at this point.
Well, and let's not ignore the fact too that I mean, I hate to be, you know, beat that same drum as before, you know, like we do for City SC, but the awful officiating to that game was also something that to take into consideration as well.
Yeah, there's definitely was quite a few questionable calls, especially defensive holding and defensive pass interference, man.
I think Mizzou was really getting screwed there.
Yeah, it depends because it depends like the way the refs were calling, letting things be pretty loose, right? So I mean, it was a lot of rough stuff in the passing game defense. You know, both sides were kind of getting pretty handsy, but the refs were letting it go, and then they kind of picked odd times to decide to actually throw a flag. And usually, it happened either after Kirby Smart talked to him or the Georgia receiver turned around and asked him to throw a flag. And then all of a sudden, now it's a penalty. So like, yeah, they definitely were a little biased, but that's to be expected in Georgia. So you just got to overcome those things if you want to be the top dog.
Yeah. And I just realized, too, that I did make a mistake that I said that they were at home and they were Mizzou. Obviously, we were in Georgia, so we were not in Pro Field. I apologize.
I
don't know why I got that.
I said that.
it's so weird. Like, right when you said they were in Georgia, I'm like, wait, no, they weren't. And I completely, for whatever reason, got the schedule in my head mixed up. I thought we were in Tennessee, but we're actually at home for Tennessee. So I got that mixed up there for a second.
Yeah. All right. No, it was beautiful. Yeah, that's the other thing is at Georgia, they did all of this. Like,
I was going to say that's the other part where they literally don't lose at home. Georgia just does not lose at home at all.
Yeah.
I
was going to say, I also feel more confident in this team than I did before that game. So,
agreed.
That's how well they play in a loss.
So last week when we were talking about before the Georgia game, I said, all right, well, we have obviously a very difficult schedule. We have Georgia, which I believe that we're going to lose. And Tennessee, I was about 50-50 on. I believe we can beat Tennessee now. Even though
Tennessee we can hang with the best now, it looks like.
Yeah.
Tennessee at home, we definitely should be able to beat them. I think we should beat them.
Tennessee is ranked 13th in the CFP, which is literally right in front of us. And they're ranked 14th in the AP. And by the way, too, just to point this out, LSU is ranked 16th in the AP. So,
LSU is 16th with 3 losses.
Yeah. But of course, we don't get the benefit of one of our losses, a one score loss to LSU at home. I get it. We were at home, but it was one score loss. We don't get that benefit because they were unranked when we lost. Like, something's got to change about the rating systems. They need to do a better point system. But we've been saying that about college football for fucking ever, right?
Well,
because it's all about what they've done and not what they're doing. But
it's both things, really. You kind of have to take into account the rating when they played the game and the rating later in the season. You kind of have to do both because there's certain situations where it makes sense to do either, you know? I mean, you could easily form a narrative that like, oh yeah, LSU's really just been amazing all along, and they just had a couple rough games early in the season, and they got right against Mizzou, so we played the good LSU, and that's why we lost. But really, you could look at it as we helped LSU get back up off the mat when they played us, and that kind of sparked their whole run. So, you know, that might look worse for Mizzou. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah, and that's a good point. I mean, when you do look at LSU, they have their 3 losses are, you know, versus Florida State. So they were at home for that one. They were then at Ole Miss and they were at Alabama. That was this past week. I don't know. I mean, maybe I should get off that horse, but I do believe, and I think it's something that like all analysts and even coaches have said that they believe that there is definitely some bias of like the resume and necessarily what they're doing this season.
I don't think it makes sense for LSU to be as high as they are with 3 losses, just to be clear.
Yeah.
I was just talking about us getting credit for losing to them close. You know what I mean?
No, 100%. Yeah. Because I mean, like, I'm just looking at this right now. So, and this is just an AP, but Tulane is, you know, 8-1. I know that Tulane, I think they play in this the Sun Belt. Tulane, you know, they're 8-1 regardless that, you know, playing, they're 8-1 in, you know, national college football, right?
They were ranked like 25 or something at some point, I think this season. Were they not?
Yeah. They're ranked 20th now.
Okay.
But, I mean, like, Yeah, like you have North Carolina. North Carolina is 7-2, and they're ranked 24th in the AAP. I get it. The ACC is not very strong, and that North Carolina did lose two games to Virginia and at Virginia Tech. However, one of those games, they didn't have their quarterback. So, you know, whatever.
Yeah, but those are pretty fucking bad teams. Like,
I agree, those are bad losses.
And I don't think they've played anybody else. I don't think they played too many people at North Carolina.
Yeah, so, and so, like, again, like, I definitely wouldn't want to be the guy that decides, like, how the rating system works, because it's very hard to be fair. Yeah. Like, you know, because you're always going to have Georgia, Ohio State, and all those teams in the back of your mind. You know what I mean? So,
yeah, it's going to have subjectivity baked in unless you had a way for everybody to play everybody, and there's just too many teams for that. So,
yeah,
it's just always going to have some of this dumb crap going on. It's just we got to do the best we can with it. But you guys, you know how good I feel about that Mizzou team, though, after that Georgia game. I actually went out and bought a Mizzou hat.
Look at that.
Yeah.
Did you? Yeah.
I got a good deal on it. It was like $19, but it's a pretty nice little hat for $19. And now I got me a Mizzou hat. So
let's go.
There you go.
Yeah.
Well, hopefully they can beat Tennessee here, obviously, coming up and can win out. I would love to see them. Obviously, we you know, they're not going anywhere in the college football playoff. Unless something drastic happens, they're not going into the playoffs this year. We know that. But what we could potentially see is them finishing the top 10, getting New Year's Eve Bowl. And really, if they beat Tennessee, I think they clinch a New Year's Eve Bowl. If they lose, they're out of the New Year's Eve Bowl. But so hopefully we can, you know, get a win here.
Well,
but they're go ahead, OJ.
Nah, I don't know about that, because so they beat Tennessee. All right, that's good. But if you lose to Florida or Arkansas, I think that drops you out of the New Year's Bowl considerations.
Excuse me. And 100% you're right, OJ. What I meant by that, too, is also by win probability, because we have a huge win probability over Florida right now and over Arkansas. I meant kind of like that. You know what I mean? The way that like the analysts.
No, you're right.
Essentially,
you're right.
They're counting those as wins, essentially.
Look. But I've been watching Mizzou since that's the only way I can watch football now is college. So now I've been watching Mizzou the last several years. So believe me, you cannot count your chickens before they hatch with this team.
Yes.
So don't start banking those wins. They have to win out if they want a New Year's Six Bowl. All right.
That is true, man. I still remember to this day when we were in high school and they were the number one team in the nation going to the Big 12 championship. And we just can't beat Oklahoma fucking once. We had two losses in the year, and they were both Oklahoma.
I know.
Oh, that would suck. And then we lost our fucking bowl game, too, that year.
Jesus. God. Yeah. Well, hopefully this is like the harbinger of a new era. Because I think Drinkwitz actually recruits higher-rated players than Pinkel was able to get. But up until this season, I thought Pinkel was a vastly superior coach. But it seems like Drinkwitz might actually have like know what he's doing.
Yeah, and it did take a minute though for us to feel that way, right? But it's starting to feel that way now.
It looks like he got himself an offensive coordinator. He admitted his weakness, got himself an offensive coordinator, and that's turned this team around. Obviously, Luther Burden becoming a beast has helped a lot. Brady Cook getting his arm healthy and all that stuff. Mm-hmm. Like, you got a lot of great players too, but he also recruited them. So, like, it's all to his credit. So, this success is great. And, I mean, if they win out, go 10-2, New Year's Eve Bowl or New Year's Day Bowl, whatever, it's going to be pretty impressive. And, like I said, I think it's going to only help recruiting. We'll probably get some flips potentially. And then I don't know, man, because he already recruits pretty well, so. It's going to hopefully they can just build off of it. Because the thing is, Georgia hasn't always been Georgia, and neither is Alabama. All it takes is a right coach hire, one right coaching hire, and you got yourself a dynasty. So if that's the guy, then that would be sweet. But that's a possibility right now. So let's just enjoy that.
Agreed. Let's transition off of Mizzou here, but keeping the college football. And this is something that I definitely want to talk about because I know it is real big right now. And that's the Michigan University sign stealing scandal. So I'm just going to take a minute to explain it to anybody that hasn't seen this. So there is allegations right now against Michigan that there was a staffer that was stealing signs, that was illegal videotaping the opposition's signs. And this one's even worse. So against Eastern Michigan. So wait, hold on. No, Central Michigan. Excuse me. I think it's one of those teams, a team that he shouldn't have been scouting. He literally dressed in the coach's attire of that team, somehow got a pass or whatever. So they only have a certain amount of passes for the team when it comes to like non-uniform
play. That was Central Michigan, right?
It was Central Michigan. Central Michigan. Okay, cool. Yeah. The Chippewas or whatever. Yeah. So it's Central Michigan. So there's like only 40 passes that get out to like coaches. And so then like, you know, trainers and stuff like that. Somehow he got a hold of one of these. And he was on the sideline. It was sunglasses and stuff like that. And Central Michigan didn't know, obviously, like what was going on or whatever. But they've reviewed the tape. And like, who the hell is this guy? And so it sounds like this has been going on for a long time. So there's a lot of conversations that Jim Harbaugh is going to be suspended. Hold on. I just want to explain it real quick, OJ.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of conversations right now that Jim Harbaugh is going to be getting suspended. That the Big 12 is going to come down with a hammer. They have Big 10 has a new president, and Freddie, I think is his last name or whatever. And he is saying that, you know, hey, there's going to be we're presenting Michigan here that there's going to be sanctions against them. We obviously don't know what that is right now. Now, what has happened before in the NCAA is the NCAA does their review and then they hand it down to the division. So to the Big Ten, say this is what needs to have happen. So Michigan is saying, hey, we're going to come at you with a lawsuit if you hand down any allegations that the NCAA hasn't presented, because we need to have, quote unquote, due process. Here's the problem with that for a lot of people is by the time the NCAA finishes whatever the hell they're going to do, Michigan's going to be in the college football playoff. And there's a lot of pressure right now. I'll get to my second point to that later on, because I definitely want to get your guys' opinion on this too. But there is a lot of conversations about how this should be handled right now, what is truly accurate. But there's a lot of teams that have the information on this situation right now. The guy in question, I don't remember his name, but the guy in question originally suspended with pay, and then he resigned because he knew he was going to get fired, right? So yeah, the conversation goes to what are Stallions? That's right. Yeah.
Yeah.
How do you forget name of Stallions? Yeah. Right. Just with one L.
Yeah.
But
yeah,
it's kind of crazy. No, and honestly, like, yeah, that's true too. It's just, man, it feels very similar to something we dealt with the Patriots of the NFL, mm-hmm. right? I want to get into it in a second here. Yeah. But Adam, what's your opinion on this? Like, you know,
yeah,
as a guy that doesn't watch as much college football, you know, obviously, you know, the Patriots I know are, you know about that subject. And obviously, for sure, as a St. Louis fan, that hurt because it obviously cost us a second championship because they fucking stole it from us. But anyways, you know, what's your opinions on that?
Yeah, for me, you know, this sign stealing scandal, it really touches upon something that I think many of us really hold dear to, you know, the world of sports. And that's the ultimate, you know, like fundamental values of fairness and integrity, you know, and in my opinion, yeah. And in my opinion, Michigan, you know, what they're alleged to have done is just beyond just like clever tactics or strategy. It literally strikes at the core of what makes sports, you know, so special. You know, so they're supposed to be about honesty, you know, and integrity, basically having like a level playing field. And whenever a team resorts to sign stealing, it's like breaking a sacred trust. You know, it's not a fair competition. It's like cheating, because it basically artificially will tilt, you know, the scales in their favor. And
100%.
And yeah, for me, it's not just, you know, a momentary advantage. It can impact the entire season and even the future of, you know, these young students and athletes, you know. So looking at the Patriot Spygate, you know, we seriously, you know, look at this like as a, obviously this was a huge thing, you know, involved all the illegal videotaping of the signals, you know, and there were obviously the penalties against the Patriots for it. But it was clearly seen at everybody in the NFL as a major breach of the principles of fair competition in football. And so, you know, while the situation may not be as extensive as Spygate potentially, but I think it's definitely raises, you know, some ethical questions about it, you know, especially respecting the rules and maintaining the purity of the game, you know, when we're talking about how wrong this is. Yeah. I just want to say we're talking about how wrong this is. We can't remember. We can't help but remember all those controversies before. And it really underscores the importance of upholding those values and ethics, you know, that make the sports, you know, a source of joy and inspiration, but also it's impacting these, you know, people's future as well. So
100%. And Adam, you bring up a great point to that about the kids' future, because now you don't get that exposure in the national championship game or whatever have you, or like, and you know, like, okay, I'm just going to put it this way. Right. So Adam, you know, I'm a decent chess player, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, I love chess and stuff. Obviously the world champion Magnus Carlsen is just a genius, right?
Yeah.
If I knew what strategy he was going to play, that my chances are not 100% of winning that game, probably not even 50, because that's just how awesome Magnus is, but they increase significantly. If I know exactly what he's going to do, my chances of winning are 100%.
Right.
So
if somebody gives you a move list ahead of time of these are the moves he's going to play.
Yeah, exactly. Like if
yeah, because then you could just make a strategy and memorize it.
For sure. You literally have his playbook at that point.
Yeah.
And that's exactly what's happening here. And not just with college football, but obviously Spygate and all this stuff too, is that you literally know the play. And I remember specifically that Kurt Warner even said several times, he's like, dude, he's like, I would make an audible at the line and immediately the linebacker or the cornerback that he was looking at would start pointing and like directing exactly to the play that they were going to run.
Mm-hmm.
And he's just like, it was uncanny. He's like, what the hell? And you got to remember too, this is before the Patriots were the Patriots. That was the first year in the first Super Bowl in Tom Brady's first year too. You know, or actually I think it was the second year, but they became, they were a dynasty that rose out of nothing. And then they get it to be, they won their third Super Bowl going to four or whatever, or maybe it was four out of five. I don't remember. Yeah. That's when they get caught. But at that point it's too late because you have all these veterans that now want to come there to win a championship. You have Tom Brady, you know, that everybody believes is the best fucking quarterback that's ever played, even though he's got caught cheating multiple times. And, you know, it's just ridiculous. You look at Peyton Manning still to this day talks very ill of the Patriots, and to the point, and I don't know if you guys knew this, but this is a great trivia thing for you. When he wanted to make halftime adjustments with his receivers, they wouldn't have it in the locker room. He would literally go to the showers, turn on the damn showers, and have a conversation with the receivers there because he believed that the room was bugged.
Jeez.
So if the smartest quarterback that's ever played this is all of a sudden analyzing and going, that doesn't look right. Like I'm doing this and they're doing that. That still means that they were doing it after the fact too, somehow, some way. Right. And this whole thing too, that happened last year that most people don't remember was that they had radio interference on the line. So they were literally at Gillette Stadium, it's supposed to be a private line or whatever. They were somehow getting feedback, meaning that somebody else was listening into their the opposite team's signal calls in the headset.
Yeah.
Right. Just like, they're bugged.
So it's just ridiculous, right? And I'm going to go on a tiny bit of a rant. I apologize to you guys, as I've kind of already been on a few rants. But what this reminds me of now, it's very similar, obviously, to the Patriots. I know I've been circling that drain here for a minute. But what I feel like, if there's not sanctions that happen right now with the Big Ten, if they don't say, okay, not only is Jim Harbaugh gone, but maybe like you're not bowl eligible or whatever, it sets up a very bad precedent because, okay, the NCAA isn't expected right now, from what analysts are saying, to bring down anything against these guys in 2 or 3 weeks. Well, the season's over at that point. right?
Right.
So at that point, right, they're in the college football playoffs. And even without Jim Harbaugh, you say, okay, roll the dice, because you know the NCAA isn't going to kick one of their four, one of the top teams out of the playoffs. You know, that's just not going to happen. You know that. So what they're going to do at that point is just let them play it out. And if they win the championship, then they win. Who cares about next year? You can suspend me for four games. You can make us Bollinger Bowl. Who gives a shit?
Yeah, they already got
the
win.
Revenue, the revenue we win off of a national title, it means so much more. And to me, it's so little, so belittling that that Michigan State, I understand, or not Michigan State, excuse me, Michigan University, and I understand completely where they're coming from, where they're trying to now, you know, make sure that they have these legal maneuvers into it. But you had, they had 11 congressmen in Michigan, 11 congressmen write to the president and say, yeah, you know, don't do this, or we're going to, you know, cause sanctions against you. Oh, by the way, out of 11 of those, you know, those congressmen, nine of them were Michigan University alumni.
Yeah.
Like, one more. Come on. Clear as day. And then I just read something, too, that like it was an analyst was just like, I think people are just jealous of Michigan. What the fuck they're jealous of a cheating team? I mean, it's the same thing that happened with the Patriots, right? Spygate happens, but then it's not. And then even Deflategate, by the way. So Deflategate happens. All that gets bypassed or whatever the entire next year. And then they suspend Tom Brady for four games. What did he fucking do? He won that year. He won the championship that year. How are you not coming down with harder sanctions? And to me, just the end of my rants. But that is, to me, what has to happen. OJ, go ahead. Sorry.
So I just wanted to make sure that everybody knew that the head coach of Central Michigan used to work for Harbaugh fairly recently. So,
I know that.
Might be how the dude got the pass in the first place, but
well, he was also purchasing tickets to over 30 games too.
Well,
FYI, so he was literally going to a numerous amount of games and had tons of photographs, video, and everything else seized as well.
Like every team, basically every team Michigan played, even the shitty ones, they're still going there and pre-scouting them, filming their signs so that they could then sync them up to the plays later, you know? So, cause then you can get your all 22 tape, right? And then you just take that and then your video of the play sign of the signs they're calling right next to each other. You literally can just get every sign right there. And then boom. Now, you know, everything they call when they call it, the next on game day, which is crazy. Like, it offers a huge advantage,
And actually, real quick, OJ, just a time out there, just for anybody that does not know this, because you actually may not, in college football, they do not have mics in their headphones to be able to hear from the offensive coordinator. That's why this sign thing is not just important for the defense, but it's important for the offense as well. The quarterback either has to go to the sideline to get the play call, or looks at the offensive coordinator for those signs specifically. So I just need to say that because they don't have mics in there. And I know there was some confusion on that. OJ, I apologize. Sorry about that, man.
It makes it harder. If you do put mics in the headsets, though, that makes it harder to run a hurry up offense, right? Which a lot of teams in college like to do. Yeah. So, you know, I'm not saying that's necessarily the way we want to go to just go to those. I mean, I see a lot of people saying that. That's the obvious thing they should just do, but Tennessee,
not every school can afford it either, though.
Yeah, well, I think that's BS. At least at the top, like if you're talking about D1, like they probably can afford it. But
yeah, but so that, and that's the thing about the NCAA sanctions, or when they were talking about equipment changes, period, because it was a healthy, or not a healthy, it was a health concern at first, because D1 schools got better helmets. And so then D2 and D3 statistics came out and for concussion protocol. So they said, okay, when it comes to all equipment changes, it has to happen for every single football program sponsored by the NCAA. So it wouldn't just be D1. Yeah. It would be D2 and 3 as well. Yeah.
Yeah. So there's probably some schools that would have to cut their football program essentially, but
just to afford it. Yeah.
But yeah. So, I mean, like I said, other than that, you know, like I know like Tennessee fans probably don't want to have to see their team stop running a hurry up because it gives them an edge. Like, let them use that, right? So I'm against the helmet mics.
Well, I mean, it just because it's a rock and a hard place, though. You know what I mean? So yeah. If it would cut the noise out, then what I mean by noise is obviously the cheating and all that stuff, then maybe. But I don't know. But also, too, you know, Michigan is Michigan came out and said that this is way more rampant. We're the only ones that got caught. Right. By the way, too. And that's exactly the Patriots defense. It's like Jim Harbaugh is like, it's got Bill Belichick on speed dials, like, hey, how do I get out of this situation? You know,
that's what every fucking cheater does, though. Every cheater, con artist, liar, they all say everybody else does it because they actually think that because they do it all the time. So they think it's normal. Yes. Like,
you're desensitized to it. You know what I mean?
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly.
Adam, you're going
to
say something.
You can't listen to them.
I had a question because from my understanding, obviously you guys watch a lot more college football than I do. But from my understanding, actually stealing signs per se is not illegal per se. But from my understanding, a lot of this had to do with the fact that he was scouting in person. And that's one of the reasons why they're kind of cracking down on him in that sense. Right.
That too.
I mean, obviously there's a lot of ethics too.
I don't know if it's a health thing, but I think it's the same thing Josh was talking about, where smaller schools say they can't afford to send people to pre-scout all their opponents, so they just don't let anybody pre-scout. So, right. Like, even showing up just as pre-scout is illegal. So that they got them there, but then on top of that, like I said, they're recording just the sideline the entire game. Like, that's also pretty egregious. You're obviously allowed to steal signs if you
can. But you can't use electronic equipment to do it, though.
Yeah, and you can't go out in advance, steal all their signs, and then go home and study them.
That's true. That's a very good point. That's a very good point. Yeah, this was like a master plan behind it. Yeah, it's like, while we're playing the game, obviously, you know, it's like we're able to decipher, you know, what your plays are based upon how you're playing it per se. But if you have that advanced knowledge, which I think is totally unfair, to have that for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah.
So, and I mean, I think the best way to handle it is to fucking sanction the fuck out of them. That's a good way to stop people from doing shit like that, right?
And make them example. They are a high profile school. And so if you're going to say, hey, listen, it's like Shin, right? What we were talking about before, the Big Ten needs to be Shin right now and put the fear of God in this. Stop doing what you were doing with the NCAA and being Ryan O'Reilly, a little bit more passive when it comes to trying to get people to step up. You need to bring it to them and prove that nobody is going to be safe here and that everybody's going to be having this. It has to have an even playing field to this. It's going to put a stop to it real damn quick.
Yeah. Like, if I was opposing fans, when my team's playing Michigan, I'd just be chanting SMU, SMU. Give them the death penalty, dude. But I think that's the way to do it. Instead of like ruining the game, I won't say ruining the game, but instead of taking out a fun aspect of the game in the hurry up offense by mandating helmet headsets, you could just actually punish the cheaters and then make it so that other people will be like, man, it is not worth the risk. Like, that's what 100%. You need to do.
So, like, right. And that's actually a good point, too, because it's kind of like, in a kind of weird way, it's kind of like baseball with steroids and, well, really any sports with steroids. It's like, dude, I know this will help me, so we could do it, but getting caught, is it really worth the risk? You know what I mean?
Yeah, well, I think baseball doesn't do a good enough job of making it not worth the risk.
No, I know. Yeah, I agree.
At least financially.
Most sports are like that.
But yeah, I mean, yeah. So my point is, like, why make things worse for everybody else when we could just punish the cheaters? I mean, they're the ones that cheat, right? We have evidence of them cheating. I mean, there's a lot of, like, video evidence of them cheating. So, I mean, it's pretty hard evidence in my point. So, yeah, okay, let them have due process. You know, let them have their due process. But when it's found out that they actually did cheat, then give them the fucking death penalty. They won't be so happy about getting a chance to win a natty this year if their program's killed
off. They're sacrificing their entire legacy, right?
Exactly. You know? That's my point. So I think that's what they should do.
Yeah. And it's super funny, too, because one of my friends reached out to me about that. You know, we were talking a little bit about it, and he's just like, Well, if I'm Michigan, and I think he's weirdly a Michigan sympathizer in there, but I was like, all right, because he was talking about like from Michigan's standpoint, and he's like, well, if I was Michigan, like this happened down, screw the legal actions, I would threaten to leave the Big Ten. And I'm like, you know what? If I'm going to play the Big Ten, exactly. Bye. You know, like where are you going to go? The SEC, like every single conference in the entire nation would love to have you, but the SEC can't take you. The Big 12 already said they can't take anybody anymore. The Pac-12's gone. The ACC is your only stopping point. And I, right. Well, that's what I'm saying. Yeah. So the Pac-12's gone, and the ACC is the only conference I could see potentially taking them. But they hate Michigan. So and it's not going to make sense logistically for them. So I mean, you would be alienating yourself. So I'm like, no, like you're going to want to stay with the Big 12 and like or Big 10. I mean, yes, that is a threat because the Big 10 can look at that and go, one of our marquee schools is about to leave. But in reality, they have way more leverage and way more power than Michigan would in that situation.
Yeah.
Because I mean, there's not a guarantee you're going to get an invite back.
I guess you would probably – I'm sure the Big 12 would probably jump at a chance to get Michigan, but I don't know what the legality of it is. They've already got a bunch of programs, so I don't know what they'd have to jump through to try and make it happen. I don't know if it's, like, legally possible. But I'm sure they'd love it because, like you said, they just lost Texas, Oklahoma. If they could add Michigan, that would be huge.
Yeah, but you got to remember, they just added a bunch of other schools as well from the Pac-12.
Right.
They did a good job of tackling this position.
That's what I'm saying. I don't know if they can – they probably can't renege on their deals with them. And then it would be kind of awkward probably having like that extra team hanging around. I don't know.
Exactly. You would immediately have to go to like the Mountain West to grab a team out of there or just go grab like Washington State or like you something else.
Basically have to add two. You'd have to add two. Yeah.
You're not going to be the ACC and have 15 schools. That doesn't make any damn sense, but you know, it is what it is. They do things weird.
Yeah, and I don't really have any kind of feelings towards Michigan one way or another. I mean, I think it's fun to watch their games in the past, like that, especially when they play Michigan State, when Michigan State's reasonably good. Like, those are always fun games. But I do have something against cheaters. So, yeah, that's why I want the death penalty.
Yeah. Well, guys, it's going to be interesting to see what happens. Hopefully, we'll get more information about that. And maybe we'll definitely talk about next week and, you know, go from there. I think we're all in agreement here, though, that we want the hammer to be dropped. And so maybe hopefully our predictions will come true, but we'll have to see and go from there.
Yep.
But let's go ahead and head to our sign-offs here. Adam, why don't you tell the good listeners here where they can reach out to us and interact with our show?
Yeah, check us out. We always talk about our Facebook and our Twitter account, the X account, or whatever you want to call it. But also check us out on the hometownlosers.com. You can always hit us up there because we have all the links there, so you can listen to us on all of our podcast options. We're broadcasting, of course, on everything from Spotify to Google Podcasts, Apple, etc. But check us out. Give us a share as well. Tell your friends. But check us out on the Hometown Losers, LOUSERS.com, as well as subscribe to us on Facebook at Facebook.com/ the Hometown Losers. And check us out on X.com/ Hometown Losers. We'd love to hear from you. And we'll be posting some socials out there here shortly. So give us a like, give us a share, and give us your feedback. We'd love to hear from you.
Yeah, we, again, always love interacting with our listeners. If there's anything specific you want to hear to the podcast, whether you want us to, take on, have us talk about your take or take on a different subject, let us know. OJ, what do you have for the game of the week? I have a feeling I know what you got, but what do you got?
Yeah, so there's one big game this week, but there's lots of games. That's Tennessee at Mizzou Saturday at 2:30 p.m. But, I mean, Saturday is a great day for sports if you're a Mizzou fan because you get to start your day off with that. And that'll take you right in to the SLU game against Illinois State, which you can watch if you're looking for something to watch. I mean, SLU should win. But and then you got St. Louis, Colorado at night. So, got three games you can watch that day. And Friday night, you have Memphis at Mizzou, which is actually a surprisingly legitimate game so early in the college basketball season. So that'd be worth watching too at 8 p.m. Friday. So
sorry. There you go. Got a lot of exciting stuff coming up here too.
Hell yeah.
So good slate. It's going to be awesome. Yeah, exactly. So, and now that Mizzou basketball is going to be kicking off too. So
yeah, and I'm going to be watching a lot of college football Saturday too.
I was going to say, and the Chiefs are on a bye this week. Oh, yeah. So lots of other great games to watch.
Yeah,
sure.
I have to figure out something else to do with our Sunday, I guess. I mean, not me. That was
not for you, but for all of us. Yeah,
definitely for Adam and me. Yeah, that is true.
Yeah,
I've been hiding my mother's voices in my head. Sorry, Mom.
Yeah.
Anyway, all right, gents. Well, appreciate you guys' time and your feedback and your opinions. And again, happy 1 year anniversary to you guys. Woo. It's been an awesome ride. We'll continue it. And hopefully we can talk about some championship teams. We appreciate the listeners as well. Thank you again for a 1 year ride. It's been awesome. We hopefully again, be able to have more content with you guys and hopefully some more interactions as well. Be awesome. Take the podcast, hopefully to broader horizons and stuff like that. Although I do have to say, the one listener in Mexico, I'm going to give you a shout out. You've been listening every single week.
Really? Awesome for them.
But yeah, every single week. Yeah,
that's great. Yeah. Well, we've gone international.
So, muchas gracias, right? Muchas gracias. Yeah. Unless
it's just going to be fake.
Regardless.
That's the
real.
Josh is routing his network traffic through Mexico.
J'ai parlé français. J'ai parlé français. So, like, it kind of rolled off weird. Like, I was almost hanging in the French way. But yeah. Okay. Whatever.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. It sounded French. The way you just.
Yeah. My bad. But all right, guys. Well, kid, appreciate it. And you can catch our silliness next week here on the Hometown Losers podcast. Have a great night, everybody.
This is OJ, and I wanted to thank you guys for listening to the equivalent of three dudes sitting at a bar talking about sports. We'll catch you next week on the Hometown Losers.